Blog Talk Radio.
All right, you're listening to The Unknown Show. I'm Bud Smith. Everybody doing? Take you back. On tonight's show, we're going to have Lawrence Glavio, author of Get the Beer Stains and other books of great poetry. That was less than slick. I've already fucked up Mr. Glavio's book. Lawrence's book is called Just Ignore the Beer Stains, and it's out from Pigeon Plank Press. And he's also has another one called Low Life's Fast Times and Occasionally Love by Iribase Press. His poems have been featured in magazines and bathroom stalls all around the world, and his books can be found on the shelves of university libraries as well as the coffee tables of tattoo parlors and waiting rooms. Lawrence lives and writes in Denver, Colorado, with his wife, Rebecca. And in just a little bit, I'm going to pull him on the show and talk about different things he has going on, writing in general. For people maybe who are kind of following this show for a little while, I went on hiatus for about like 2 months. I was working a lot. I work at an oil refinery, and it shut down for a little while, and we fixed a bunch of broken machines and stuff like that, and I was working a lot of hours. But I'm happy to be back, and everything went pretty cool with Thanksgiving. I drove down from New York City with my wife's spout, and we went down to Tom's River and had a good time. And just mentioned a couple things about my trip down there. So I went down to Asbury Park, and I ran into Mark Brunetti of the Idiom, and he's got a really, like I said, the Idiom, I've mentioned this in the past, it's just a really great writing zine. It's got just got some really cool poetry, mostly from Central Jersey. It's like a whole really cool scene going on down there. And he puts the book out, Mark does, about 5 times a year. And every time he puts it out, there there's about 1,000 copies that he makes. And he, you know, puts them together by hand, and he distributes them around. So, you know, I'll be at a random restaurant or bar down there, and, you know, I'll just run into stacks of the Idiom at different places. It's really cool. So I just want to mention that to everybody out there who's writing and submitting. Send a poem or story to theidiommag@yahoo.com. I'll put the link up on the website. Send something to him. Send something to the Idiom. It's just a fucking cool-ass book. And also, I want to mention, over the break, I was able to read Pale Fire by Vladimir Nabokov, which is a really, really great book, and also was reading All the Rage by Kevin Ridgway, if anybody's looking for some new stuff to read. But one last thing I want to mention before we pull our first guest on, first and only guest. Recently, I've had a few correspondences with Martha Grover, who's a great writing coach. And I know she's great because she does this for hire and just does an excellent job. If anyone's looking to fine-tune up any manuscripts, she operates the Somnambulist zine, which is another one of my absolute favorite zines. And Martha, you can reach her through MarthaGrover@hotmail.com. And that's just Martha, MarthaGrover@hotmail.com. And she's an excellent editor, proofreader. Give her a shout, and maybe she can give you a hand with your manuscript that you're looking to shop around. I know a lot of you guys out there have things messing around, floating around. Hit her up. We'll post the link on the site, and maybe that will help you out there. Who knows? So I'm going to pull our first guest on, Lawrence Glavio. How you doing, Lawrence? What's up? Hold on a second. I think he's... Try that again. Hey, Larry, you there?
Bud, I'm here. How are you?
Hey, man. What's going on?
Oh, man. Fantastic opening. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, man. I fucked up. I said the name of your book wrong. That's going to be error one of probably about 250. So, you know, put that right off the list.
Hey, that's all right. You're just easing your way in, and with every beer, it'll just come more and more natural.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. I'm not drinking tonight, which is a little, I have a cup of coffee here. It's not really working.
Hey, so I would be remiss if I didn't mention the Jersey connection. I got a lot of family up in McCutcheon and kind of Piscataway area.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy that you say Piscataway, because I was just talking about the Idiom Mag, and those guys were, I met them when they first lived in the town of Piscataway. Had this old ratty house there. And
I've been watching
cool.
that from afar. You know, I've been seeing you promote their stuff, and it seems like a really cool publication. I've been trying to get some stuff together to send their way. I'm always kind of looking at that kind of thing. I don't know if you ever read the South Jersey Underground. It was in a magazine that was online a couple years ago.
No, I never read that. Cool shit.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. It went under for a little bit, and then it came back. But nice little scene out there in New Jersey, you know.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm a little jealous of the scene you have in Denver. There, everybody had, you know, half the people I seem to talk to online all seem to be close to Denver or living in Denver. A lot of my friends seem to be floating around in Denver.
Yeah.
How's it going out there? What's it currently look like in the Denver scene? Or am I imagining something that's not real?
No, you know, it's here. It's here, and it's a good thing. Every now and again I talk with Rob Raymond, the editor of my first book, who lives up in Canada, and he talks about how, you know, his scene up there is kind of on life support and that it's really kind of dying out. But moving from Washington, D.C. and coming out here to Denver, it's good to see a lot of people doing a lot of different things and putting a lot of energy into it. I've been fortunate enough to read with a lot of great writers out here, and I don't think that really would have happened living back in D.C. In that part of the East Coast.
No, I hear you. The D.C. is a strange little town, you know, even just to hang in, you know, even just to go out and get some beers or whatever. How long did you live there?
My entire life until 25, and then my wife and I packed it up and just drove out west and landed in Colorado. Yeah.
You grew up like in a suburb of the actual D.C. area, or just somewhere in the vicinity?
Yeah, just outside in the Springfield area in the suburbs, and it was quite a tough thing. Not a tough thing, just looking back on it, and as you grow up and some of the experiences you get, you know, Washington, D.C. is a very pretentious city, and it's cutthroat in all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
But out here, it's more put up or shut up. You know, if you're going to come out to a reading, if you're gonna try to, you know, make something happen with what you want to write and what you're trying to say, then people will do it. And more or less, people will support it, which is a refreshing thing, you know?
Yeah, I was talking to my friend William Seward Bonney, and he's talking about in Denver just the different art scenes that are happening there. There's, you know, it seems like, again, more of a vibe like a Brooklyn arts kind of scene. You know, there's just like small art collectives doing cool shit rather than just I never got that vibe really in Jersey when I lived in Jersey, and I don't know. Did you have anything like that in D.C. right?
No, you know, but it's interesting that you mentioned Brooklyn, because before we moved out here, Rebecca and I were looking at possibly moving to Brooklyn. We were hanging out one night up there with some friends in that neighborhood where the Brooklyn Brewery is. I couldn't tell you what the name of the neighborhood is. But just like, you know, this nice warehouse
like
area where you can go and grab beer and just get takeout. But a lot of good different art pop-ups out there with a lot of vibrant color, a lot of attitude. And, you know, I haven't met William yet, but they're doing a reading. I think it's this weekend or the next that I'm going to try to go to, so I can maybe meet him, because I, you know, he seems to have like that abstract edge, which I like, and to actually try to put something on, put on a show, you know, host bands and,
yeah.
and bring writers in and have them, you know, party.
Yeah, exactly. He does a lot of cool shit, you know. Also, I guess maybe it's like an hour and a half south of you down there in Albuquerque. It just seems like there's some really cool shit popping up too. Frankie Metro's throwing some really cool readings and stuff down there. I don't know if you saw that one that was happening.
No,
but,
I missed that one. But another guy that I really enjoy, John Macker, you know, is down in that area of the country. And let me tell you, man, I took a ride from Denver down to Scottsdale a year ago, and that desert out there is incredible, man. If you've never driven through any kind of desert like that, holy shit, man, you've never felt so alone.
Well, I went cross country a couple times, and it was usually by like you know, leeching off other people who were going, and just kind of like, you know, driving around in the desert always feels you're in a fucking Door song or whatever, you know. And you're just, I'm eating beef jerky and drinking Coca-Cola, and I'm like, I'm in the end. Oh, this is great. You know, air conditioning, like a loser.
Doing anything you can do to keep your eyes open, man, and not veer off the road.
Yeah. So what do you got going on these days in Denver? You working on some new stuff? What's happening writing-wise?
Yeah, you know, I feel like, you know, I've been doing quite a bit of late, which has been a lot of fun, and it's in that same vein of trying to really just put yourself out there and say, look, you know what, if I'm going to write something, I'm going to stand by it, and I'm going to get out there and try to have fun with it. I did a reading not too long ago at the Globinski Gallery in the Santa Fe Arts District down here in Denver with a few other of my writing pals around the area here, kind of an older crowd, which was a really good time, and for the rest of this year, I just finished up a new collection of poems that I'm going to look to put together and see if I can make some sense of it, turn it into a book, and I don't know, just a few other little things here and there. I'm always back and forth with Wolfgang over at Epic Writes, and I think him and I are going to be doing something over the next few months and getting some shorter, pared-down poems, kind of giving them an interesting arrangement. So other than that, just writing here and there and... kind of doing a little bit of everything else, you know?
Well, I like that you said fun, because that's, you know, it's bullshit when you're not having a good time with it, right?
Yeah, and I don't like the pressure. You know, sometimes, you know, when people ask, you know, oh, well, how do you like to write? Or, you know, honestly, man, I've only written a few things probably over the past week or so, 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just go through those depressions where you're not really, like, putting everything into it. You're doing other things and you're keeping yourself, I don't know, I'm going around the corner tonight to the club down here, man. There's this rock jazz band that's playing. I'm going to go check that out. You gotta go out there and have fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the truth. I want to get you to read some poems now. People listening in who aren't familiar with your work or people who are familiar, maybe you can show them something they haven't seen before. I don't know how you like to do your stuff, if you like to set poems up, if it even matters. Do whatever you feel comfortable with. Give me like, why don't you give us like three poems in a little block here. How does that sound?
Okay. All right. Sure thing. And, I don't really have any particular setups. I just like to let the poems speak for themselves
cool.
for the most part, you know, if there's any follow-up questions, of course. But, all right, I'll go ahead and this one's kind of a... this one's a good one to kick off. Hopefully it gets deep here. It's entitled, I Waited Until. I waited until we sat down for dinner until I brought it up. So, are we any closer to a decision about what we discussed earlier? We are, Heather told me. I want to go with the off-white drapes and beige carpet. Oh, I said. I thought we were going to talk about if we were keeping it or not. The next one is entitled, As She Packed. As she packed her suitcase, I told her, boy, am I going to miss you. Folding a pair of black underwear, she said, me too, sweetheart. Hotel sex won't be the same without you. And the last one I'll read for this block here is entitled, With. With a blown tire and our pockets empty from a day at the track, I told Janie our best bet was my thumb and her mouth.
Yeah, that's some great stuff. How they're like little short stories, you know, little at a Hemingway six-word novel or whatever the fuck, right?
Yeah, let me tell you something. You know, I always feel that a poem should make you feel something. Whether or not you don't like me or you hated the poem or whether or not you liked it, it made you laugh or maybe it made you cry, at least it made you feel something. Nothing's worse than when you read something on the page and you just feel numb after the fact because there was nothing there.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, you spend a lot of energy trying to figure out what the hell the person was trying to say. Sometimes abstract stuff can be great, and sometimes, you know, super, super straightforward. It's just completely different feels. But, I like what you're doing with that. It's pretty fucking cool.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. You know, I always feel that if you have to have a Webster's while you're reading a poem, then that poem isn't really telling you what it needs to be saying.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it, definitely. Like I said, I think there's, you know, the other side of it's cool, too. You know, you know, like, for instance, you know, if you listen to a band like Radiohead, for instance, it's jumbled noise, it's jumbled lyrics, and it's the complete opposite thing of a straight singer songwriter thing, and maybe that's the two different sides of the two different kinds of poetry, you know.
Well, I can completely agree and see your point with that metaphor, and it's actually quite good. You know, I'm a big punk rock guy. I like music that's that's kind of more scratchy, you know, a little bit more raw. But at the same time, I've seen Radiohead, and, you know, I've listened to some of their albums, and, you know, there can be an appreciation there for the type of art that they're trying to produce, because, again, they're giving it their all. They're not just trying to half-ass it. So for some people, you know, it really hits, and for some, you know, it's just more like a single or a double.
Oh, totally. Hey, what's some good punk rock bands that maybe I don't know about? Or I mean, what a question to ask. What are you listening to these days that's good? Like newer stuff, maybe? You haven't come across anything good?
You know, I haven't been listening to too much of the newer stuff. I've been reverting kind of back to more of the television and Buzzcocks kind of days. But there's this... there's this band out there that I came across. They're called the Orwells, and they have a really Iggy and the Stooges kind of swagger to them. And, you know, they really, man, they really do kind of lay it down. Some of their songs, you know, I'm not going to give them a full endorsement, but I would say if there was one newer band that I thought kind of, you know, was a little bit more of refreshing, it was them.
Cool. I'm going to check them out. Yeah, I always seem to be floundering around to see what the hell's going on music-wise, you know. I got a little crappy record player that sits next to my desk, you know, and ever since I got that, I've just been listening to, you know, cheap $1 records I find at flea markets, and that's always old stuff, you know. But
that stuff is great. I'm always
looking for the new stuff, you know.
Well, that stuff's great, and I'll tell you, the best record find I've found, I think, in my entire collection is a promo copy of an old Warner Brothers band called the Pirates, and I put that thing in, and damn, do they rock! And you know, it was probably like 58 or 59, just a black and white cover, you know, Skull and Bones, and man, you know, it's like 8 songs of raw power, and it is fine, like $2. You know, I bought it off the name, and on the back cover had some picture, black and white photos of the band, you know, some overweight guys with vests on and hairy chests. And it was like, these barbaric assholes, they got it ripping.
Yeah. I guess that's the cool thing with, you know, playing punk music. You can get as old and fat as you want and still do it. You know, the audience seems to be a little more accepting of that, you know.
Hey, it's not about the glam, it's about the sound.
Sure. You going to see any shows anytime soon or anything like that? I know you said you're going to some jazz club tonight around the corner, like bands. You going to see anybody coming?
No, you know, living here in Denver, we have a few different theaters and venues in and around the neighborhood. And so Rebecca and I, you know, on a Saturday night, $10 at the door, you got me, and I'll go ahead and head in. And, you know, they'll have, you know, 4 or 5 bands on the bill. But, no, nothing on the horizon, just anything that happens to show up on the marquee the next day. And the other week I went and saw this band just because of the namesake. I was walking by, it was $8 to get in. And the name of the band was Larry and His Flask. And
nice.
I just come from the bar across the street. I'm like, well, this is fate. I've got to go check this out. And
you should have got a picture of the marquee or whatever the hell it was, eh? That's awesome. All right, I want to see if I can pry some more poems out of you. Will you read us another block or whatever you want?
All right, sure thing. I'm going to go ahead and read a poem here. It was featured in an issue of Fluorescent Fields for Your Uncle, which is edited by Rob Plath. And I had tried submitting to this magazine quite a few times and had gotten rejected a few times. But it only made me want to keep, submitting to the magazine. And so I submitted to a tribute magazine, and it was to anyone that you like. And one of the guys that I particularly care for is Charles Bukowski. So I wrote this poem, and it ended up making it into the issue. And I always feel particularly good when I read it. And it's entitled, I Stopped by Chinaski's. I stopped by Chinaski's Friday night on my way downtown. Put on your shoes and let's go sink to the bottom together, I told him, as he took a shot of Canadian Club. To hell with Los Angeles, Henry shouted, turning up his Sibelius record. Tonight it's Gene, this bottle, and that typewriter. But you give him hell, Larry, he hollered before slugging another one from the bottle. Grabbing the trash can and putting it next to the kitchen table, I said, you too, pal. The next one I'm going to read is entitled Lewis Was in Town. Lewis was in town, and I invited him to meet me at the local open mic night. After a couple of bad poems, I said to Lewis, let's get out of here. This shit isn't poetry. We walked across town and settled into a basement bar. The waitress came with our beers, and as she left, we both took in the view. Nodding to each other, we clanked bottles to the poetic sway of undergrad TNA. And the next poem I will read is entitled, What If? What if this plane all of a sudden fell from the sky? The guy next to me asked. I'd make a move on that curly-haired blonde 2 seats up, I told him. Are you fucking nuts? The guy asked me. Well, I said, the way I see it, we've only got a few seconds, and if she's going down, it might as well be on me.
So he's the, like you said, the barroom profane, you know? Nice.
Hey, sometimes I have the mouth of a sailor. What can you do?
Yeah, there you go. What's the what's coming up, man? Are you reading anywhere anytime soon or doing anything you want to tell people about so they can maybe come and see you?
But I wish.
Yeah?
coming up, I actually, through this month of December, I'm not really doing too much. I'm hoping to go out and take in William Seward Bonney and Justin Holland and Jason Hardung at a reading next weekend. But short of that, I think I'm going to let the new year come around and then start to try to plan another event with some of the other local authors out here and maybe even try to tag Bill and see if he wants to read. And so I don't know. You know, readings are something – I did about 6 readings this year, and every one of them you always learn from and you always – do more and more with each time you get up there and read, and you can always take away from the people that you read with, and I do. That's the best thing. That's the best part of having the opportunity to jot down a poem is to read it to somebody.
Yeah, it's interesting with readings. Kind of think of readings as like stand-up comedians going out and screwing with their bit. Do you usually rewrite things after a reading, or you like to have your you don't like to present things to the world until they're done. Seems like two different ways of approaching it. How are you with that stuff?
You know, I do that a lot, and it's good that you asked this. I was just talking with Wolf the other day, and that manuscript that I had sent you a little bit earlier, he had an opportunity to read as well, and I like to also have my I try to get out there, get my book out there for review, and so. I had a guy from Italy review my book a few months ago, and one of the things that he had brought up was the spacing of stanzas in terms of line breaks and whether or not, there was a rhyme and reason behind it. lately I've been going back and forth and trying to get some feedback from other writers, and Wolfgang did the same thing for me. He read the poems, and he's like, these are great poems, but think about that spacing. That guy from Italy, you know, in the video had a point. And so now I've been reading my poems out loud more and more, man. And, Bud, you get so much for it when you read it aloud to hear yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, you really do. I mean, I guess, you know, there's different ways, too, of taking, like you just said, with working with an actual, you know, whether or not, let's say, you know, the manuscript winds up going with this publisher or that publisher. If you're working with a publisher on editing something, that's one kind of feedback. And then if you're getting it just from somebody who has nothing invested in it on the same token, it's like a completely different kind of feedback. When the two things line up, that's fucking beautiful.
I think it's fucking beautiful. And, you know, I'm sure you know much of the same in terms of writing dialogue. You can't write dialogue without speaking it aloud to know where there's pauses or to know if it sounds right. A poem is the same way. You can't just put something down and say, yeah, this is great, and then never read it aloud without thinking about how someone is going to be reading it in their head as they're processing what you're telling them. That's the most important part.
Well, I seem to notice that a lot of your poems are, you know, all the ones I've read just you know, on the page and from what I've heard you read out loud tonight, they have they're strictly comedic. But I can definitely tell that when you're doing a reading in front of an audience, there's going to be laughs, and I think that's the greatest indication that you're doing a good job at a reading is if you get people to laugh, because generally there's alcohol involved and they're laughing, and that's you pretty much got them there, don't you?
Oh, you always got them. But the best reading I have given to date was up in Fort Collins. Jason Hardung invited me up there to read with him, and we read at a brewery, at a microbrewery, and probably with a crowd about 50 or 60 people up there, and everybody was just so fucking drunk, and we were just killing it. Now, whether or not we actually were is a different story because of how much people were so hammered, but man, it was a great time. It was a great time. Great crowd response. People are into it.
Yeah. Hey, get them laughing, you're doing all right, you know. Unfortunately, that it's a little harder when people are reading more serious stuff. And I'm waiting to go to a reading where somebody they actually say something sad enough to get the drunk people to start crying. That's, you know, that'd be nice, you know.
Yeah, now that would be something. I don't know if a Larry Glaveview poem will ever get someone to cry. Maybe if they're that pissed at me because I offended them in some way, but...
Yeah. Yeah, you threw their car keys out the window or something.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, listen, I'm wondering if I can get a few more poems from you. Can you read us some more stuff?
Yeah, definitely. And since we're talking about the comedy of poetry and how that can be a good thing, I think I'll actually change the vibe here a little bit. Maybe read a few without the gut busting humor, so to speak. And so I'll start with a poem. Recently, an author out here that I particularly enjoyed reading, Mike Adams, passed away, and his passing, you know, kind of got me thinking about a few different things. His book, Steel Valley, which is published by Lummox Press, is a phenomenal book. One of the best books, poetry, non-poetry, however you want to classify it, bar none. Fantastic. And so I wrote a few poems for him, and I will read two of them to start off. And this one is entitled A Few Years Back. Just to, I guess, set up this poem, I told you I don't generally like to do this, but because it's a little bit more of a downside. Mike and I had a chance to read. We were featured in the first Lummox Journal together, and so we read together at a release party for the magazine, and this is about that day. A few years back, I rent with Mike Adams in Boulder. Some other writers were on the bill, too, so Mike decided to put all of our names in his cap and draw to determine the order. My name came out first, and I immediately told Mike to go with someone else. He wouldn't have any of it. He told me to give it everything I had and do it with a smile. Standing on stage and seeing Mike in the crowd, I couldn't help but think the somber irony that a man whose guts were dying were the ones to make sure mine were alive and kicking. The next poem I'm going to read is one that I wrote for a limited edition broadside that was letterpressed. 100 of these were made for a tribute reading that I participated in not too long ago for Mike Adams, and I had the distinct honor of having this letterpressed on something from 1918. The whole poem was hand-set. It was a very beautiful process, and it's entitled I Lent Steel Valley, and Steel Valley is Mike's book. I lent Steel Valley to a buddy who lives in central Pennsylvania. A few years back, he did some camera work on a PBS show about old Buffalo's blue-collar industry. A month or so later, he called to say how much he enjoyed the collection's unguarded laughter, its back-breaking blood, and above all, Mike's uncanny ability to give ink printed by machine such beautiful texture.
Nice. Come on, one more.
All right, here we go. This one is entitled, While I Was Taking Out the Trash. While I was taking out the trash, I heard my neighbor Carl shout over to me, Hey, Larry, you got a minute? I walked over to Carl's driveway and said hello. I quit my job and just found out I had pancreatic cancer, he told me. Know of any good doctors? Sorry, Carl, I don't. I hardly go myself. We stood there for a minute until our attention turned to my porch light coming on. Well, I should get back into Rebecca. You bet, Carl said, lighting another cigarette. Before I closed my door, I looked back and watched as the light on Carl's garage flickered out.
Huh. That's really something else, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I want to thank you for coming on. It was really cool talking to you. Thanks for all the great poems, and tell me about these bands. I wrote them down, the Orwells, the Pirates, and I'm going to look around for Larry and his flask.
Now, again, I am not giving them any type of vouch whatsoever, so check them out on your own risk, man.
Okay, I just put another star next to their name. Thank you for the recommendation. Hey, listen, if you do make it down to the readings there with to all those great peeps, tell those guys to say hi. Tell Dustin Holland I said hello and buy him a beer for me, all right?
Hey, absolutely, bud, you bet. It's disappointing that you're not going to be able to make it out there for it, but hopefully we'll get you out here into Denver sometime soon and we can share the stage together.
Yeah, man, sounds good to me, dude. Thanks for coming on, and been a pleasure. I'll have to drag you on here again one time in the future.
Bud, that sounds great. You know, I'm glad we were able to finally get on and chat a little bit. You know, I know we've been kind of exchanged a few messages back and forth, but you do a great job with the show and bringing, smaller authors into the limelight, so we appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, man, rock on. Have a good night there, Larry. All right. Peace, man.
All right, do the same, bud. Have a nice night.
All right. Okay. Well, that was Larry there, Lawrence Glabeview. I hope you'll check out his books. He's got a few really great ones. I got them sitting here on my shelf. It's a very full shelf of lucky, you know, people mail me books and stuff. Oh, boy. So, anyway, I hope you'll check his books out. And, yeah, go see some art or something this week. I got tomorrow off, so I'm going to go downtown to the city and walk around the Met Museum and see if there's anything just floating around on the walls down there. I hope people see something fun like that, too. And get you next Tuesday.